need be. But we all knew that someday another army would burst forth from shadow. An army with dragons. An army far greater and deadlier than the one that took Amphatiel. And if we were not ready, then the kingdom would fall. Of that we were certain. It was a hard time to keep quiet. The king loaded us with lands and honours. I was given another estate in Sashtalia to add to my troubles and thank me for my service. 20 high magi were ennobled, several were knighted, and honours and lords for the arcane orders were performed throughout the city. Officially, we were heroes. Unofficially, we were losing favour at court. Without the necessity of a war, high magi were more of a bother than a boon to the nascent crown. Regular nobles were starting to whisper against mage lords in court, behind closed doors, and Grendine was quite open to their influence. High magi were out of style at court. Remeran mercantile interests were in. The influence of the new princess, Armandra, and the likelihood that Princess Rardine would also marry a Remeran, had introduced new powers at court, and very wealthy ones. As our services were no longer needed, it was time, the whispers said, for the high magi to quietly retire to their estates and study their books, and stop getting in the way of regular folk. While Pentandra welcomed the civilizing influence of Remeran society at court, she also understood that our task was not done, but she had her own reasons for welcoming at least a temporary peace.
I asked Arborn to dinner the other night. Alone.
She confided in me and Alia over lunch at Fair Oaks, a few days before the wedding festivities.
I thought I was pretty straightforward about my interest. I do know how to express an interest in a man.
That was like saying that an axe knew how to slice cheese.
So, is he interested?
Alia asked mischievously, as she sipped the incredible Cormeran wine Penny had found somewhere and insisted we try.
He said...
Penny blushed. Then she took a deep breath and started again.
Arborn indicated that he might indeed be interested, but that the laws of his clan, or whatever, forbade him to wed any woman who had not undertaken to learn the Kasari rites.
Wait, he actually turned you down? I asked, incredulous.
Oh, Penny, Alia sighed, I'm sorry. Some people are just... I'm not giving up on him that easily,
snorted Pentandra.
I've done some strange things in pursuit of my art. I'm not going to shrink at learning a little primitive superstition. If my future husband wants me to learn his tribal rites, I will. It will be interesting. It will help me understand him more.
It was my turn to snort. I can't believe you would change around your life just to please a man, Penny. I thought she would get snotty, but instead she looked thoughtful.
Once? I never would have thought that either, Min. And I probably wouldn't if it was just any man. But Arborn, he is just pure and wholesome and good in every sense of the word. He is a man of high quality, perhaps more than any man I've ever known, save Minilan.
No, he's definitely better than me, I interrupted. Hands down, he is among the most competent men I've ever met. He makes me feel a little girly, I confessed.
When a woman encounters a man of that quality, Penny continued solemnly, she dedicates herself to making herself worthy of him. He wants me to go learn the ways of his people before we consider a wedding. That is not too much to ask of me. Not if the prize is a man like him.
I know exactly what you mean, Alia agreed. Just wait until you start having babies. You appreciate them on a whole new level. She smiled mischievously. So, when are you going to, visit his sacred grove? I asked, changing the subject quickly.
Next autumn, in Kasar, she supplied, after I get my assistant trained well enough to handle the regular order business in my absence.
We will be guiding the Kasari children from their Alshari groves by then, I nodded. That was part of our agreement with them, to gain their assistance at Amphatiel and Gilmora. We owe them a debt.
And we will repay it, she agreed. Arborn loves children. Escorting a few thousand across the wilderlands during summer won't be too hard. and they'll arrive just in time for the autumnal rites. The same ones I'll be taking, she said smugly.
If Pentandra wanted to stop the war for a little while and have a couple of kids, I couldn't really tell her that was wrong. I was looking forward to raising my own, I realized after that meal. If I didn't have to run off to the Penumbra every time Sherul got restless, that might be a very good thing. Almina was the most adorable baby ever born, and just getting really cute. Manalian was already saying Daddy and Mummy and other short words. He promised to be a bright and engaging little boy, and I was very much looking forward to teaching him how to be a man. And then there was their secret half-sister, Ofinwensha, whom I had not even met. Yes, I had a lot of business to conduct that the war was a distraction from. Even Telamon was surprisingly open to the idea of a respite in the war. He had been in the field almost continuously since it began, and he had lands given as a reward that he had never visited. He, too, was considering marriage once he got his estates organized. That surprised me. He was one of the best soldiers I knew, let alone war magi. I suppose it shouldn't have. I won't mind a few months, or even a few years of rest, he admitted when he came by to see me the day before the royal wedding. I thought I would, when I heard. I thought I would commit regicide, when I heard. But the more I thought about it, the more I decided that doing something other than killing might do me good for a while. You've got Seven Dormin. I want to build something like that. The wedding was as great and impressive a ceremony as it could be, with 3 days of parties and receptions afterward. I went to dozens of events, said a few words, had a few drinks, and then slinked off to the next one. It was at Her Highness's formal presentation at court that I saw him for the first time. A Gervan, right in the middle of the city. He was a tall one, broad-shouldered and muscular, and his fur grew in uneven patches in places, indicating scars. He had seen some battle. A brace of royal guardsmen escorted him everywhere, but there were two human guards in his livery following him. This, I discovered, was King Ar-Shakarl, supposedly the direct descendant of Sherul. Now he had been chosen by a council of shamans and warlords in the Umbra to lead them in Sherul's name. And not just goblins within the Umbra. Sherul's realm included many human settlements now, and he intended to treat with the rest of us just like another human kingdom, Ar-Shakarl pledged in front of the court, before he signed the official treaty recognizing his land. I bit my lip so hard, I tasted blood while he signed. The Gavani envoy spoke fluent Narasi, with hardly any accent. He knew enough human court manners to keep from embarrassing himself. He dressed in custom-tailored, human-style clothing. If there was such a thing as a Gavani courtier, this was it. I didn't speak to him at court. I was afraid of what I might say. But Hatarian conversed with him at length, and reported that he seemed an intelligent and reasonable fellow who seemed to speak of nothing but peace between our realms. Hatarian wasn't believing of it either, but he had to follow his employer's lead. If the king wanted a treaty and peace, as court wizard, Hatarian was bound to support that policy. That didn't stop him from reporting everything that the Gervan did to me, and with whom he spoke. Nor was King Ar-Shakarl, as we were compelled to call him, the only non-human in the city. The Alka Alon sent a sizable delegation, with many rich gifts to the happy couple, and used the opportunity for a kind of summit, courtesy of the arcane orders. I hosted the meeting myself. Lord Eritas was there, despite his better judgment, looking splendid in his armor, still in his human-sized form. He had traded his staff for a great sword, and carried it with him everywhere. Lord Arathel was also in attendance. He had come personally after our hollow victory at Amthatiel to check on his old friend and to hear for himself the tragic story of the great city's fall. So had Lady Micrethiel, to my surprise. Lord Letheran arrived late. Annas Yetheran was still recovering from the battering that two dragons had given it before they had been driven off. Now it was attempting to accommodate the unexpected influx of Amthatiel refugees. The two kindreds did not mix well or easily, and it was a topic of much discussion in their own haunting tongue. Of the Great Council, only the Aronin Ladas had not come, citing the evacuee issue. And Thatiel had over 10,000 Alka alone when the war began. Most of those needed a place to live now. The four lords of the Alka Alon Council were disheartened by the fall of Anthatiel and what it portended for the future. Not only was the strain on resources hard for them, the promise of more warfare was looming. They did not believe King Ashakarl's empty words about peace any more than we did. In fact, now the Alka Alon were the ones who were determined to carry on the war. They were far more eager to help now. They admitted it would take them a few years to prepare, but they had every intention of ending the threat of Shirul. Only they were considering expelling Lord Eratas from the council, on the basis that his city was no longer a power in the region. The suggestion came from Micrethiel, a rival whom I felt was trying to jockey for power on the council. I wasn't the only one who noticed.
"Absolutely not," declared the diminutive Lord Letheran. "Eratas and I may have our differences, but he still holds great power. Indeed, who among us would you choose to lead our armies once we build them? Eratas is still lord of his people. He has earned his place, and he should remain a voice in our affairs, with his fortress or without. Had Annas Yetharan fallen to the dragons, would you be so quick to see me stricken from the council as well?"
"I merely felt that this was a council of powers," defended the tiny lady of Nandoriel. "It was originally designed..."
"The purpose for which it was originally designed has long become moot," Master Harathal sighed. "The council has been, in fact, a governing body for some time, regardless of the original intent. A body based on factions and alliances, as dead as the original purpose. If this council is not sufficient to that task, then let us augment it to fit the needs of the day."
"Wise words," agreed Eratas. "I clung to the glories of the past, thinking I was unassailable because of old glories and forgotten might. It cost me my city and nearly my daughter and my life. Let us consider the needs of the time and see if we cannot form a more robust response to this threat than we have."
"Do you actually intend to wear that horrid form for the duration of the struggle?" asked Lady Micrethiel, distastefully. "The odor is bad enough, but..."
"I will," affirmed the Lord in Exile. "I and all of my folk. These forms are powerful and strong. They are resilient, and they give us great advantage in battle.
But does it not become tiresome to be burdened with the limitations of such a body?" asked Micrethiel. "They are woefully inefficient in so many ways. The necessity to consume as they have, and their mating habits."
"It is not nearly as disconcerting as you might think, once you become used to it," assured Eratas with a faint smile. "My daughter has taught me the wisdom of knowing our friends in this way. It changes your perspective, it is true, and certain elements of it are disturbing to my mind. They are tall, strong, fast, and sturdy. Just the vessels we need to prosecute this war."
"I still can't believe you let your daughter marry one," she sniffed. "No offense," she added, as if she was just noticing the human in the room.
"None taken," I dismissed. "It is a bold experiment. My man, Sir Riff, is a brave and true warrior. He is utterly devoted to Lady Fallowen, and she has some affection for him, despite herself, I think. A strange marriage, it is true, but these are strange times."
"In truth," nodded Harathel, "it has been centuries since there was such a union. Let us hope that things work out better this time. For our part, I wish to see my friend bring his people back to his realm some day, and I will do what needs to be done to that end. If the wedding between Fallowen and this Humani is fruitful to that effort, then let us encourage them."
"I think it is still early in the experiment for that," Micrethiel said flatly. She was clearly not amused by the thought of such unnatural perversions. "There is also talk of pardoning some of the old rebels and enlisting their aid. Under the circumstances, this might be advisable."
"We shall consider each case individually," Lord Letheran agreed. "There are many I would not see free, no matter what the circumstance.
But others have demonstrated their sincerity. even if they have forgotten their wisdom. Eratas nodded. Considering the nature of their talents and the relative unimportance of their crimes?
A discussion for another time. Harathel nodded. Of more pressing concern is the report of the sighting of the daughter of the Aronin of Amadia, Lady Amaraz. She is apparently somewhere within the penumbra, though her exact location is unknown. Even more concerning is the company she was keeping.
And who might that be? Outlaws?
A dragon, answered Master Harathel, with an amused smile. It is said that one escaped the clutches of the abomination last year, and made a home for itself in the wild. This is disturbing news. To have such weapons in the control of the enemy is bad enough. To have them wild and free to destroy at will is unacceptable. This will become a problem, my friends, unless something is done about it.
The Lady Amaraz was seen?
Asked Micrethiel, with great interest.
The sacred charge of her line falls to her now.
That wasn't the important point to me. A dragon? In the wild? I asked, my eyes wider. That did sound a little more terrifying than one under Sherul's control. Shouldn't we just leave it alone?
It is not that simple, spellmonger,
explained Micrethiel.
Eventually it will seek to mate, and the consequences of that might be disastrous.
I'm thinking the consequences are leaning heavily toward disastrous already, I countered. A dragon. Another one.
It was a mere report, based on a vague sighting, but it was said to be her and the great worm. Nor is she alone. She was seen in the company of a Humani mage, it was said. Nothing else is known right now, but at least she is alive. We have an obligation to seek her out and bring her back to our refuges. And perhaps some hope.
Just one of many matters of concern for this council, Master Menelin, Harathel agreed, and since your affairs seem to overlap with ours a great deal these days, I propose we include Master Menelin as an associate member of the council, as we have done in such situations in the past.
Me?
I asked, confused. I'm not Alka alone.
You are helpful and useful,
Letheran said, shaking his head. Compared to that idiot who leads you, politically, you are not that poor a representative of your species. This is not the first time that the council has included non-Alkans.
Thanks,
I said, unsure of what else to say. And I do suppose I have a stake in this now, since your daughter is marrying one of my vassals, and you're going to be my neighbor for a while.
No more than a few centuries, I promise,
Eratas said.
I miss my city already. I am already considering how I want to rebuild it. As quaint as the Uwaris are, they are nothing compared to the Mindans.
Well, I hope your stay is a pleasant one, I said, realizing that having a proud Alka Alon lord for a vassal for the rest of my life might not be as easy as I thought. And it might interest you to know that there is a small outcropping of snowstone there, which you are free to mine and use as you see fit to outfit your encampment.
More of a cottage, actually,
Eratas said.
Nothing extravagant.
I didn't believe that for one moment. So that is to be our plan, then, Harathel announced. We shall bank our fires and marshal our strengths until we are sufficient to fight the abomination properly. A plan with many advantages, not the least of which is not attracting attention.
Attention? I asked, curious.
Whose attention?
There are other powers at work on Kalador,
explained Lord Letheran, cryptically. Powers so great, the squabbles of the Alka Alon and the Humani mean nothing.
That is the real danger here, Master Menelin, the danger you are not aware of.
One reason why we were cautious with our response to Sherul was not a lack of will, but a desire to avoid attracting the wrong sort of attention. Had we used all of our strength and powers, well, the consequences could have been far worse than merely losing a city, as painful as that is.
Yet we have gotten adept at such subtleties, agreed Harathel, and if we are cautious and careful, we can end this war before those powers even realize that it was fought. That, my friends, is my greatest hope.
That sent my head spinning into 1,000 different directions after the council meeting, and I realized that there was an awful lot about this world that I had not learned yet. And now, I also realized, I might just have some time to pursue that knowledge. We were at peace, after all. We had a treaty. After the council adjourned, I slowly walked up the stairs to the top of the complex, the great tower that commanded such an excellent view of the City of Lights. It seemed a mean and squat mockery of Anthatiel's graceful spaces, but it was still a rich and vibrant city. It might not last 1,000 years, but while it was here, it deserved to be protected. I dismissed the guards from the roof and set a chair near the edge of the balcony. Then I set up another, before planting a torch in a convenient socket and lighting it by magic. I didn't even have to utter a prayer. Brigham materialized before I even sat down. "Goddess," I bowed, indicating the chair. "A glass of wine?"
"Thank you."
"No," she smiled. "You did well, Minolin." "We did well. I just got people talking to each other. It was other people's brilliant ideas that saved the day."
"You exercised real power," she said, shaking her head. "That's amazing, considering the disadvantages you were in."
"I had the gods on my side too," I smiled. "That had to help."
"Actually, it did," she agreed.
"I gave a little help in 6 places during the battle, important places, and, of course, there was the divine inspiration." "That helped," I agreed, taking my seat. "I suppose you'll want me to build that temple now."
"Yes, but that's not why I came here. I think that we need to start making some of the other gods permanent. If you agree,"
she added cautiously. "The other gods? Don't take this the wrong way, but I'm thinking we want to proceed down that path slowly, carefully. If what the Alka Alon just told me is true, magic at that level is bound to attract attention. From whom or what, I am not certain, but they seemed a little spooked by it, as if they were trying to keep this entire war a secret from someone."
"They are,"
she sighed, taking the other seat and watching the flickering lights of Castabriel with me.
"And they are correct to do so, Minolin. When mankind came to Kalador, the Alka Alon were not the only ones here, nor even the greatest of the powers. Kalador has been here a very long time, and we are relative newcomers here."
"Sounds like there is a story there," I remarked, sipping my wine.
"Hundreds," she corrected. "Thousands.
The story of humanity on this world is complex and complicated. It involves many betrayals, misdeeds, and heroics. It would take a lifetime to tell. The story of Kalador itself is far more complex and convoluted." "You'll just have to give me the exciting bits, then," I grumbled.
"Another time, Minolin," she promised.
"I think we shall be working with each other closely in the coming days. We have much to prepare, and while it seems as if Sherul is beaten, that is far from the truth. He is weakened. Your defeat of his army was a serious blow, but he is not beaten by far. He too will develop his strength and build it up before he strikes again in the open. Until then, expect a nasty, secret little war," she predicted, "a war with many sides and many factions." "At least the gods are on our side," I repeated. I meant it to be a joke. She still didn't laugh.
"Perhaps not all of them," she said quietly. "We are a fickle lot, and now with this crisis, there exists the possibility of new gods entering our consciousness. There is no foretelling what loyalties such entities may have."
"Why wouldn't they be on our side?" I demanded. "I thought the gods were the products of the collective human subconscious."
"We are," she agreed, "but that is not always in your favor.
There are many dark places within the human mind, and not all humans feel the same way about life as you do." "That's actually a good thing, else nothing would ever get done. I suppose if evil lurks within the heart of man, then it can manifest as a god, too."
"And that is what we must avoid," she insisted.
"That is the sort of thing that would attract attention." I laughed, humorlessly and perhaps a little bitterly, But I laughed while the goddess of fire looked at me funny.
"What is it?"
she asked. I just realized that in all this time I have been pursuing power to get things done, that no matter how powerful and important the people I deal with are, there is always someone or something more powerful, more important out there. Even the gods are afraid of something, I pointed out.
We are afraid of a great many things. In existence, for one, which is why I am grateful for this gift you have bestowed on me. The continuity I have when I manifest now aids my efforts significantly, and I feel that other gods could also benefit from it. Select gods,
she said carefully. Yes, let's not entertain any of the wrong sort, I teased. What would people say?
If we get them to manifest properly, we can quietly start making them permanent fixtures, hopefully before the wrong people notice. But your observation about power is correct. No matter how great and powerful you are, there are always greater powers in the universe to teach you humility.
What? You think I need to be more humbled? I asked accusingly.
It's not my choice, she stressed. It is the nature of the universe. Against that, even we gods are bound.
So, that's it. I'm supposed to sit back, relax, and help the gods stick around until Sherul decides to start trouble again. That sounds boring, I decided.
Boring?
The goddess asked, amused. A bit, I nodded. I mean, I don't like war. I hate it. But it is exciting. Without battle to look forward to, well, what am I going to do to keep myself occupied?
You know, Minilan,
the goddess of inspiration said mischievously, I really don't think that's going to be your biggest problem.
Minilan, called Alia from the stairwell, it's late. Are you coming to bed with me?
Brigga smiled affectionately.
Speaking of the greater powers of the universe,
she said, as she faded away. Alia came up the stairs just moments too late to have a divine encounter. A pity. Perhaps it would have convinced me that I wasn't going insane if someone else actually saw the goddess. But that wouldn't be wise just yet, I knew. If I was crazy, I didn't need anyone else to know about it.
Did I hear you talking to someone?
She asked suspiciously. Just finishing up a little work, I explained, rising and kissing her. Are you ready to go home yet?
I wish we could,
she said, frowning, but we still have a couple more days of receptions and parties.
Why on earth did you let me make friends in this town?
She asked accusingly.
Now all they want to do is sit around, eat lunch, drink, talk about other women, and complain about their husbands.
Don't let it worry you, I said, kissing her gently. We won the war. The king said so. We can start taking a little more time. Building things without being in such a hurry for a change.
No more battles.
Not for a while, probably, I agreed.
Okay, then,
she sighed. I suppose I can put up with a few more receptions, if it means I don't have to worry about you anymore.
I didn't say that,
I chuckled, putting my hands where they weren't supposed to be, outside of the marriage chamber, according to some prudish advocates of civilization. Luckily, I married a country girl. Making love on a rooftop of a spire in the middle of the most gorgeous city in the kingdom might not have been proper. But then what use is power if you don't abuse it from time to time? And I had all the time in the world for a change. You have been listening to High Mage, Book 5 of the Spellmonger series. Produced by Greg Lawrence. Associate Producer, Emily Durr. Text copyright 2017 by Terry Mancor. Production copyright 2018 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible, so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.